Have to stop calling this homework and call it a study guide. So people will maybe not have such a sentiment against it. The purpose of the homework is not to be graded. You're not turning it in. It's just simply for you to do some advanced study. So when we get together and we have a discussion, that's what we're going to be doing. Then you're a little bit prepared. You've looked over the material and will help our discussion somewhat. So that's the real purpose of giving it to you ahead of time. I hope that you will take it and use it that way to just again to help prepare you for the lesson. What I plan to do, because I'm waiting for this is extra different kind of paper that we use for these, and we ordered some. It's supposed to come in Friday, but it hadn't come in yet. So when it does, my plan is to go ahead and run off the copies of all the first six lessons and give them to you, so you'll have all of that in advance and you can study them as you want to and so forth. And then we get close to the end of the sixth lesson, then I'll give you the last six. So hopefully I'll have all of that to be able to do that next week for you. But again, the purpose of it is not to be graded or anything like that. It's just to get you studying ahead of time, so when we come into discussion, it makes the discussion a little bit better, because people have already looked at the materials. Did anybody not get a copy of the study guide? Y'all didn't get any? All right. It's not homework. It's a study guide. All right, that's all I have for today. So if you didn't get one, then see me afterwards. We'll make a copy for you. Okay. Into all the world. This lesson series is really, it's a continuation of the studies that we've been doing really for the last year on evangelism and all part of our CERT program that we have getting us to be able to talk with people about the Lord and hopefully to save souls. As I mentioned in the lesson last week, Peter in 2 Peter talks about the coming of the Lord and what that day is going to be like. And as you've heard me mention several times, one of the things that he says there about the all the elements are going to be destroyed, he says, since everything is going to be destroyed in this way, he asks the question, what kind of people ought you to be? Okay? And he tells us that we need to be holy people, right? And we need to be, he says, we need to look forward to that day and speed its coming. Okay? And so the issue of speeding the coming of the Lord, as we've talked about many times before, how do we do that? Well, you know, my russism is, and my take on when is the Lord going to come back again? I don't know the day or the time. But I'm convinced that that day is going to be at the point, and only God knows when this will be, when everyone who is going to be saved will be saved. Okay? The reason I'm convinced of that is he's going to wait. Peter says just before those verses, he says, the Lord is not slow in keeping his promise. He is patient. Okay, not wanting anyone to perish, but all to come to repentance. God is patient. He wants people to repent and come to him. That's his desire. Okay, so he's waiting for that time when everyone who is going to accept him has accepted him. In other words, there'll be no one else who is going to be saved. No one else who's going to accept Christ. There's no reason for him to wait any longer after that to come. And so I'm convinced that that's when he'll come back again. Now, date and time, who knows? Only he knows when that point in time will be, because he knows men's hearts. Okay? But the part about speeding its coming is the part that you and I need to pay attention to. We need to be looking forward to the day of the Lord. And speed its coming. How do we speed its coming? The only way I know of to do that is to share the gospel with those who are lost so that they will accept, many will accept the gospel. And the more people that do, the closer we get to that point when everyone who's going to be saved is saved. That's our job, is to share the gospel with people. And that's what we've been emphasizing for all of last year with the Dale Carnegie stuff that Dale shared with us in terms of how to talk with other people and so forth. All of our CERT training and things of that nature we've been doing. This is continuation of that. It's focusing on how to study with people. But this, more importantly, really is the focus of this study is really going to be, okay, we've got all these tools. All right, now let's start focusing on who we can use these tools on. Okay, same way with our Sunday morning Bible worship study series we're doing right now. That's what it's really all about. Okay, let's take the tools we've been learning and gaining, and let's start figuring out who we can use them on and with, and so we can start saving souls. All right, so we have a command, a commission to go into all the world and to make disciples, right? Everybody agree with that? Okay, Matthew chapter 28, 19 and 20, right? Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And I will be with you to the very end of the age. So we are to go into the world, and we have basically been talking about for a long time our Jerusalem and Judea, okay, our world. Right? We don't all have to go to Africa or to, you know, Honduras or Ukraine or wherever. We don't have to go physically all over the world, but we do need to go and teach people, okay? And as we've been emphasizing, the fact that we all have a Jerusalem, a Judea, and a Samaria. That is the folks that are in our lives, our family, our friends, our neighbors, our co-workers, people that we already know. Okay, they're part of the world that we need to be going into. Okay, and so this study is going to help us to look at some things. A lot of it has to do with looking at Jesus and how he interacted with people, and what did Jesus do to bring people to him? And how can we follow his example and do the same thing? All right? So we look at this, the front page of your study guide. What is the aim of this particular lesson here? Is to understand the vision the Lord had of the lost and what that vision moved him to do for the lost, in order that we might develop that same vision and respond to the needs of the lost today as Jesus did. Let me ask you this question. How passionate do you think we are, and I say we, I mean we as a church, but also you as an individual, how passionate are you for the lost? See, that's a significant question to start off with, because if we're not really passionate for the lost, we're not going to take the time and the effort and the energy it takes to try to save people's souls. Okay. We need to have that passion and care and concern and realize what it means to be lost. So let's talk about that for a moment. When you think about someone who is lost, what does that really mean? If that person dies in a lost state, what does that mean?
They're eternally separated from God.
Yeah. They're eternally separated from God. They're condemned to hell for eternity. Okay? Do we understand? And again, this goes back to our CERT efforts, okay? Do we understand the seriousness and the emergency aspect of what that really means? Okay? The thing that we were talking about with that before is, you know, if you came upon someone that's lying on the ground and they're, you know, obviously having a heart attack or some other medical, you know, emergency going on, what would you do to respond to that? Would you be like, you know, the priest that walked on by the man that was robbed and beaten and left for dead? The rabbi that did the same thing? What would you do? How would you respond? Anybody? Okay. I mean, would you at least take out your phone and dial 911? Okay. I mean, that's really the least that you could do, right? Is take out your phone and call 911 and say, hey, I got a person laying here in the ground. I don't know what's happening, but it don't look good.
Okay.
Okay, everything you could within your possibility. But that's different for everybody, isn't it? Okay? I mean, if Brian came upon somebody like that, if Chris came upon somebody like that, what are you guys going to do?
I mean, that's our job. I mean, that's what we do.
Right?
So it's a little different
than
the average person, you know, coming up on the same situation.
All right, but what's the first thing you're going to do if you came upon somebody like that?
I'm going to try to help them.
Okay, you're probably going to call 911, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to assess what's going on and do what you can help because you've been trained to do that, right? Okay? If I came across somebody like that, I'm going to check them. I've had some, you know, some emergency training, and I can do CPR and those kind of things. If that's what's going on, I'll try to figure out what's happening so I can render whatever I'm able to do. Okay? But there's probably several of you in here that have never had any CPR training or anything like that, right? So would you know what to do with somebody that's having a heart attack? Probably not. So what are you going to do?
Call somebody that does know.
Okay, call 911.
Well, if you don't have a phone.
Then find somebody that does. It's probably, if there's anybody around you, somebody around you's got to have a phone. These days, everybody's got a phone. Okay? But Here's part of what I'm trying to get you to say is that, you know, we need to do whatever we can. We can't all do the same thing. I don't have the same ability as Brian and Chris do, but I can do something. Probably more than some of you can. There's some of you that can do more than I can. And there are some that can't do as much. But we can all do something. The only option is to walk around that person and travel on the other side of the road so we don't have to what? Get involved. And we leave that person there. Now, we know that about physical problems, don't we? But what about spiritual problems? Let me ask you this, and maybe this is something you haven't really ever thought of before. Which is more important? Spiritual problems or physical problems? Why? Okay. The physical problems that somebody has are temporary, right? In this life. But spiritual problems are permanent. They're forever. We may or may not be able to save that person physically from whatever's going on. But, you know, as I say all the time, and Cindy, you know, she doesn't like it when I say this, but hey, we ain't getting out of this thing alive. Everybody's got to die of something. Right? Physically, we do. But we don't have to die spiritually. Okay? My point here is, folks, do we really see how serious it is for someone to die spiritually? Okay? Now, you know, there are folks that you can try and help, but they don't want it. They don't want to know the truth. You know, they're not interested. Okay, that's their choice. But we at least have to try. Brian?
Yeah. Chris and I, there's a lot of times that we treat somebody medically. We do our best, but their treatment doesn't have the outcome we want. And it's spiritually the same way. There's going to be people you come across, you do your best, it's going to have outcomes that you don't want.
Exactly.
Struggle getting involved. If it's an emergency or
and part of it is what we talked about last Sunday in our worship time, is that, you know, it's that somebody, anybody, and everybody kind of thing where we're expecting somebody else to take care of it. You know, and we have to realize that maybe you're the one that the Lord chose to take care of it. You're the somebody that needs to take care of it. And again, it's not a matter of where we're going to save everyone. My mother, who just passed away, and I thank you for the sentiments, you know, that many of you have shared and said, well, she's at peace now. I don't believe she is, because my mother was not a Christian. Though I tried to teach, I taught her, I showed her what the Bible said. Her response to that was, I'm Catholic, I've been Catholic all my life, I'll die Catholic, even though I know these things are not right. Okay, that's her choice. But we got to try. We got to try. Okay? And we won't try if unless we know the seriousness of the consequences. Okay? Charlotte?
It reminds me of the first person I ever heard say, someone dies, and you know they died out of Christ. You don't know, because people instantly think that you're going to heaven.
Yeah.
Are they okay now? They're in heaven. And, yeah. And when I heard people say that, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know that one. You know, how can you say that? Especially with the lifestyle and everything that the person had. Me knowing what you have to do to be saved.
Right.
I'm trying to tell you all along the way, you know, how to be saved, and then when that person dies that's close to you, you know, they were nowhere near that.
Yeah.
How can you say?
Well, again, that's, you know, part of people have the free will that God gave us to reject the help. I don't know how many times you guys have ever ran upon somebody, you know, and they're saying, I don't want any help. I don't want any treatment. I'm not going to the hospital, you know, what have you. Even though you know you need to go to the hospital. Have y'all ever had that happen? Yeah. And somebody says, no, I don't want to go. Okay, well, so what choice do you have? You throw them in the ambulance anyway and hog time to the stretcher and throw them in there and let's go. You're going, whether you like it or not, right?
Yes.
You know, yeah, you can kidnap them and force them, right? No, we can't do that.
You tell them the consequences. You want to make that decision.
Exactly.
Here.
And that's, well, we don't need to get them to sign, but that's the point, is that our job is just to tell people. Okay.
Karen? Years ago, people were compelled by truth to share the gospel. Today, people are compelled by fear, lawsuits. I mean, God didn't even touch somebody in our day, or try to help somebody, you're immediately, you know, thrown into a lawsuit situation. And I think, you know, God still tells us that He has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power of a sound mind. And so we should, our consequences should be irrelevant. God says go or do, just go and do.
Go and do, right.
We're done.
Yeah, and how long can the consequences last? Anyway, till you die, right? And if you're doing what the Lord tells you to do, then it doesn't matter, right? They can't sue you in heaven, right? Okay.
That's a good Samaritan law that prohibits a person helping somebody in an emergency from being sued
here
on earth. So,
right. Yeah, right out of the Bible. Well, again, my point here is to try to emphasize to you the seriousness of lost souls. Because until we really grasp that, we're not going to be that concerned. We put more emphasis, I think, too often on the physical situations that people are in than we do the spiritual. And as we said earlier, the physical is temporary. They're going to die of something anyway. Now, I'm not saying that to say, well, I'll just walk on by and leave them lay there. That's not my point. The point is, we got to take spiritual sickness and so forth just as serious, if not more, than we do physical. Because that's permanent. Once a person dies, that can't change. Their situation can't change. There is no such thing as limbo. Okay? No such thing. Y'all have heard me talk about that. It doesn't exist, okay? You can't, there's no purgatory. You can't pray people into heaven after they die. So we've got to try to help as many people as we can by at least giving them the opportunity to hear the message so they can be saved. If they reject it, that's their choice. And I will say this, and you'll hear me say this over and over again, God never has forced himself on anyone. Jesus never tried to force people to accept him. And I'm not going to do that either. Okay? But I will do everything I can to share the truth with people so they can make a decision. Okay? Because I don't want to be standing before the Lord in judgment and have him say, "Why didn't you talk to this person?" See? They were lost because I didn't make the effort to try to save them. So that comes down to this vision. Do we have a vision for the lost? Like Jesus had. Brian?
Like the song we sang years ago, that you never mentioned them to me. I don't want to be in that waiting and somebody I know come up to me and see me where I'm at and say, "Why don't you say something to me?"
Yeah.
Because we don't know the influence that we're going to have until we try to have that influence. Mm-hmm. We may prejudge somebody because that's what we're doing, but we really don't know the results of our influence to the Christ until we do.
Exactly. The Lord's zeal, this is under the statement here, the Lord's zeal for the lost is expressed in Luke 19, verse 10. He left heaven and came to earth, why? To seek and to save the lost. Right? That's why he came here. Seek and to save the lost. The Lord saw people realistically, as they really were. Saw their real needs. I want you to hang on that, okay? Because that has everything to do with our worship lessons that we're doing under "Here Am I, Send Me," and looking at the needs of people in our Jerusalem, okay? It's something that we have to develop and be able to do like Jesus did, to be able to look at someone and see what is their real need here. And sometimes people will come and they'll say, "This is what I need," but that's not really what they need. We're going to talk about one of those people this morning in our worship time, okay? That Jesus had that ability to see what someone's need is and address their need. We need to be able to do the same thing. With that realistic vision, he was moved with compassion and began to do what was needed in that situation. And that's what I want us to be able to do. Okay? Our Lord did not want that vision to die with him. He wanted it to continue in the lives of his apostles. All right, so let's go to the second page here and let's talk about the encounter. All right, make a list, it says, of things we see in others if we are looking at them from a worldly point of view. Also make a list looking at them from a spiritual point of view. How many of you made a list? Okay, you want to share some of the things on your list?
On my list, a lot of times we look at people's exterior looks, how they look.
Okay.
They're wealthy, successful. We're looking for the physical aspect of success.
Okay.
The other part of the list, being like that part, second.
Well, you check, yeah, both of them, the worldly point of view and the spiritual point of view.
Spiritual point of view is more of a look at the heart.
Okay.
Because to see if they're how they treat them, how they're looking for compassion for other people. Are they looking diligently for God's word, for the truth, and trying to do the right thing? So that's the characteristic of the person in spirit. Because I think you really see it as somebody who is trying to do the right God's way.
Okay.
His whole life is ran by that.
else? I saw several hands. Dale, what do you got on your list?
Well, I looked at, from a worldly viewpoint, you're looking, in a way, kind of selfish. You're looking
okay.
at their appearance, you know, whether or not the person is friendly. Is there anything that that person can do for me?
Okay.
Whereas, if you're looking from a godly viewpoint, I have, you know, first of all, what's the condition of their soul? But also, do they have earthly needs, and do they have spiritual needs?
Okay.
So you're looking from a selfless viewpoint. And it made me think about the Dale Carnegie course, because it was written for sales. It was written for you to be able to make connections and you to sell your product.
Right.
It was written from a selfish viewpoint. I also used those concepts to teach leadership, where it was I'm going to help you and it's going to help me. It's a shared
right.
thing of I'm going to help you to be a better employee so that I can be a better leader. But when we applied it in a spiritual setting, it was let me make a connection with this person so that I can help their spiritual condition. It was a selfless kind of way to use the exact same principles.
Okay.
Instead of being selfish or this will help us both, to I'm going to use this to help you.
Okay. So worldly is what do I get out of it from you? Spiritual is what can I give, help you and serve you? Okay. Who else? I saw some other hands up. You got bashful all of a sudden. I don't remember whose hands I saw. Someone over here. Wen, what do you have there? Okay. Okay.
But I did come, this idea did, I thought of it a lot when I was going through it. I think from the worldly point of view, something I've been guilty of myself is we tend to be a little more judgmental about
okay.
people, because it reminded me of when we were stationed in Japan and we had a friend at church that she was going to homeschool their kids. And they'll say, well, school here isn't really that bad. In fact, the principal, when he came, they interviewed him, asked him what his favorite book was. He said the Bible. You know, the guy
okay.
was really a great guy. But she saw a teacher that had a nose ring. And so she couldn't send her kids there. Well, I hated to tell her, but if you go back and look in the Old Testament, Rebecca had a nose ring.
Okay.
But sometimes we do look at those physical aspects. We look at tattoos and piercings. And I'm not saying, I realize that we're supposed to dress modestly.
Right.
But sometimes we look at how somebody's dressed or what kind of bumper stick around in their car. And we immediately make an assessment about them.
Okay.
And they can't possibly be Christian because, or they're falling away because. And I think that's where we really have to be careful. We have to, to me, the worldly is an exterior look, and then the spiritual is getting to know the person.
Okay.
And finding out what their true, how they really are, where their position is.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that we make judgments on people in terms of whether they are quote unquote good material for
oh, yeah.
salvation? You see, again, we're not talking about people who are already Christians. We're talking about trying to save souls. So we use these, you know, these ideas that we have this worldly judgment or what have you from a worldly view. And do we look at folks and say, they don't look like really good Christian material to me?
Mm-hmm.
Because they got the nose ring or the tattoos, or, you know, maybe they had a drug problem, or they've had this problem or that problem, you know, what have you. And so we just write them off because of looking at them from that view. We've already decided that they probably won't accept Christ. They're too far out there, so we don't even bother.
Saul is a classic example of that. Okay. All people, I mean, persecuting and killing. Yeah. Like, if anybody's not going to make it, it could be Saul.
Yeah.
And yet he became one of the greatest leaders of all time in the Christian faith.
Yeah.
And how do you know they're not already? I mean, unless they're doing something they shouldn't be.
Right.
But even as a Christian, sometimes I do things I shouldn't.
Right.
I'm not perfect.
But see, again, keep in mind, I just want to remind you this, we're talking about the people in our Jerusalem or Judea that we know are not Christians.
Okay?
That we're trying to reach. And so think about some of those people and ask yourself, how many have I looked at and said, nah, not going to bother because, you know, again, these things I've already determined, they probably wouldn't make a very good Christian. So we don't bother. Charlotte?
About me, the reason why I don't talk to some people is not that I don't think that they're going to make a good Christian. Because the people have looked at me a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You might have said the same thing about me.
Yeah.
But with me, say, I don't have time. That's me. I don't have time for this foolishness. Mm-hmm. That's me. That's what I be saying.
Okay.
You know, when I'm trying to, and if you start coming out of your mouth with a whole bunch of just, where are you? I don't have time for you. That's something I really have to work on.
Okay.
Because I don't know how many people that I had that opportunity to bring to Christ, but I don't have time for your foolishness.
Okay. All right.
You know.
Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Honestly. Paul in 2 Corinthians, chapter 5, and the text that, you know, is on here for you to memorize. You can memorize it if you'd like. It'd be good, but if you don't, that's fine. But at least you need to be aware of it. Okay? He says, so from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view, though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. You know, we need to start really looking at how do we see other people. Okay, those in our Jerusalem, how many of them, you know, got tattoos all over the body? And I just got to be honest, when I see somebody, especially a woman, okay, when I see a woman with tattoos, one of the first things, well, why did she mess up her body like that? Okay, that's my first, you know. Then I have to tell myself, okay, wait a minute, that's a person that was created by God. Okay, it's just, my point is, that's just one of those things that just really just, I don't like all those tattoos all over somebody, okay? So I've got to be careful not to have that to cause me to go, I don't want to throw around that person, you know. I've been around enough tattooed people that, it's like, you know, hey, I don't let that stand in the way of talking to them, but it's just, you know, we got to recognize those kinds of biases or whatever that we have that would keep us from trying to reach somebody.
Ironically, it's those people mm-hmm. are the ones that are more susceptible actually to
sure.
Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Crying out for help. That is an expression.
Exactly. Exactly it is.
It's Christian people that look like they got it all together that are the hardest to reach.
Oh, yeah. Church people.
They already got it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But why do we tend to look for people that look like us already? See, that's the thing.
It makes the church look good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think part of the thing there, and it's a good question, is that, you know, well, you know, we start bringing in people like that, and we're going to lose some folks. You know, what are they going to contribute to the church? I mean, people don't even have jobs. What do we want them here? We're just going to have to be spending more of the church's money to take care of them, and all those kinds of reasons why we don't.
Or maybe comfort.
What now?
Comfort.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can kind of relate to them. They kind of like you. And you can kind of.
That's probably.
Yeah.
So it's more comfortable for you.
Well, that reminds me of the story that was told a lot about the visiting preacher that was coming to his church, and nobody knew what he was going to look like. And they were all excited, though, because he was supposedly this wonderful evangelist. And this guy came in and sat in the back, and he had a lot of tattoos and he had a lot of
that hearing. Was actually at the and East Coast Evangelism Workshops here.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and come to find out, he was the
Keynote speaker. Tattoos all over him. He actually was a vice detective for the Atlanta Police Department. Okay? And he looked like the roughest biker that you would not want to encounter in a dark alley. And as he was mingling around with people before the first session, people just like stay away from this guy. And weren't they surprised when he got up and he was the keynote speaker for the whole lectureship?
Because I really don't care. But I mean, I've got a son-in-law that's got a ton of tattoos. He's one of the best husbands and fathers I've ever known. I don't care.
Right.
He doesn't look like me, and it's not. So, I tell you one of the reasons why I wouldn't do it is just because I'm cheap. But anyway, and I can't commit to anything long enough. But the point being that we do that. How is that any different than looking at somebody based on their skin color?
Sure.
Or based on a disability or whatever.
Right.
It's just, that's who they are. It's a part of them. Right. I don't care.
And that's the thing, that we've got to be able to look at folks not from this worldly standpoint, whether it's tattoos or poverty or their skin color, doesn't matter. We got to stop looking at people that way. And again, I think a big part, as I mentioned a moment ago, is what do I get out of this? Well, I'm not going to try to bring them into the church, because if we do, they're poor people, and we're not going to be able to take care of them. All they're going to want is what we can give them all the time. And we make those kind of judgments based on the outside appearance.
Now, Russ, we have to be, as Christians, we have to be careful, because we are chasing Christians away with that type of attitude that we think we better than anyone else. And I've heard that from some sisters and brothers. That some of us sit, not just in here, just Church of Christ, and I'm talking about Church of Christ. We sit and we think we're better than anyone else, and we're losing people for that. And we have to cut that out.
Yeah.
You can't be friendly to who you want to just be, your little group, your little set. We don't have that.
Yeah. It's got to be everybody.
And we lose it. We're losing our own because of that. Yeah. And we have to cut that.
And those things are a result of how we're looking at people from the outside.
Look at people and say they're not worthy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A great example of that is when Jesus met the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been looking and seeing
her. Yep.
And giving her that living water.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she was a Samaritan woman.
Which he knew who she was.
Yeah. Right.
Not the physical water that she came to get.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. One of the things that you'll see in some of the lessons we're going to be doing in our Here Am I, Send Me series is that as I mentioned earlier, when Jesus encountered someone, he immediately saw what the need was. And oftentimes, and that's an example of it, where the person will start a conversation about something and Jesus will jump right to the, he doesn't pull any punches. He just not waste any time with small talk. He just jumps right into it, okay, and addresses the need that the person has. But he does it with compassion and care, because the compassion. Yes, for the lost, and that's what we're trying to focus on here. Yes, Ryan. Exactly. Right.
And those are the very ones that we can have.
Exactly. Exactly. I told you all a couple weeks ago about the young lady that I've talked to before, invited her, but her response, very similar. She's an unwed mother with two children, and most churches reject her because of that.
Why?
Because they know her background.
Right.
You see? I'm just saying that's how she sees it. You know, that church people, they don't want my kind around. You know, the woman at the well, and so we've got to help people. We got to reach out to those people. Okay, first of all, in our Jerusalem, we got to stop judging them on these things and reach out to them, and again help them to see. Okay, but at least try. Okay, But we'll never do that until we really have the compassion that Jesus had for the lost. We've got to see people who are lost for what it truly is. And then that compassion will compel us to reach out to folks. Okay, real quickly, let me get you to focus, all right, if you haven't already, to look under that explain it and express it part where we're going to be looking at next week these different situations and circumstances, encounters that Jesus had, okay, and there's several questions under each one of those, and I want to get you to take some time and study that. And let's talk about these people, because this is really what we're looking at here is, okay, these are real people that Jesus encountered, right? And what do we learn from what Jesus did? And how can we use that in our Jerusalem and Judea to reach people that are very much the same? All right? Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.